Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tracking Connections podcast. This is Sarah.
This is Aiden, and I'm excited today that we're joined by Ingrid Bauer and Jean-Claude Catry.
John here, and it's wonderful to be here with these two wonderful people, plus Aiden and Sarah, of course. We like to lift up voices from around the world who do really, really good work with, these guys just don't do nature connection. They do people connection and definitely self-connection. And I've had I've had the honor really to be in an ongoing conversation with Jean-Claude. Now, I guess it's been almost 14 years. We haven't been consistent, but it's been 85% of that time, you know, so I get to hear his stories regularly. And I'm really deeply moved by the level of commitment that you two, Ingrid and Jean-Claude, have for what you do. And not only what you do in Salt Spring Island with Wisdom of the Earth, with your immersion program and the children's programs and family programs you run, you know, you guys have been like pumping out high level connection from that little island in British Columbia. And it's just been spreading, you know, your concentric ring, your wave is felt and people love what you do. You also work in France, which, you know, we're very interested because obviously Jean-Claude's home country is France. And you guys go back there pretty much every year and do programs over there. And there's a whole thing going on in France that I know we'd love to hear about. But tell us a little bit about, you know, Wisdom of the Earth, how long it's been running, the kinds of things you do, and, you know, anything that inspires you. I guess we'll pass it first to you, Ingrid.
Yeah. Now, Wisdom of the Earth started before it even was Wisdom of the Earth, probably a little over 20 years ago, when we were getting involved with ancestral arts gatherings and doing our own thing, and then realizing that we wanted more of that and started teaching it and looking at some of the things at the time. We didn't know about the eight shields or anything, but there was a place where, you know, I was seeing there was people connection needed in some of these more bushcraft focused gatherings. And we were bringing some of that into it. And then there was a program that started 20 years ago next mm-hmm. year for kids, for our own kids. And so we got our own kids involved in that program. Our son, also named Aiden, was 7 at the time, and our daughter Nicoya was 4. And we started from that. And that program was run by some mentors who had some training from Tom Brown and also some work in the eight shields, and that got us really involved in that. And that's developed over time, and that program is still running. It's now for 8 to 14 year olds. It's called Wolf Kids. There are other Wolf Kids programs that have sprung out from that in British Columbia. And that, after a while, we realized that we needed to have more adults connected to, you know, it was really important to connect the kids to nature, but they really needed adults around them to connect to nature. And our immersion program started about 7 years ago, about the same time as we actually started working in France with adults, primarily educators. And so we run many, many programs for kids, teens, families, little kids, yeah, adults, and then the immersion program, which is a 9-month program of either 1, 2, or 3 years for adults who really, really want to deepen their nature connection. And
people of very different age, in fact, yeah, very young people who are looking for what they are going to do of their life, and some people who are midlife crisis, and even very old people who are
very old people, really, people like our age, like in their 60s. Very old people. That's so funny.
But the whole adventure in France started through the hair OCP. For some reason, at one point, it became clear in my ideal scene, I need to bring this to France. And I had no relationship to France. And soon after, Synchronicity stepped in. Jean connected me with Norbert. He told me, can you support Norbert? And so we got together with Norbert and we started a kind of a village talk program in France that's still running today. And few months later, it was 6 or 7 months later, another synchronicity, Cécile, that is living here, had a whole search for meaning and ended up in our school in Canada and got so inspired. She came back and she wanted to have a reason to come back. So she made a movie about what we're doing. And that movie has spread the whole interest in France, especially among educators.
She came to the Art of Mentoring that we had on Salt Spring Island, and she herself had really shifted from living the Parisian lifestyle and working in startups and business to discovering, like realizing that she'd kind of achieved all the things in her successes except happiness. And she kind of let it all go and went for a big hike on the Saint-Jean-de-Compostelle and discovered nature connection kind of on her own, but then that led her on this whole trip of what nature connection really was. And so she made a movie that it's now been, I mean, tens of thousands of people have seen it. It was just filmed with a little dinky camera that she bought. She wasn't a filmmaker before.
And their heart.
And her heart. Her heart really.
She didn't know anything but filmmaking. And since then, I mean, we started an online course that is also include gathering in person, two a year. Even now they are three a year. And it touched about 660 people every year. Yeah, that is.
60 times 2. Was there 64 in the second week?
Yeah.
So, yeah, about 120 people.
But in the course, there's about 60 people in the course every year.
And it's a 3-year program, too. So people take that over 3 years, meeting in person, online, through Zoom, through Zoom platforms, and then again, meeting in person.
The first gathering was the end of the course, and the gathering that we are starting in 2 days is introducing people.
That is so great. We've noticed when we started our village how many people from around the world were French, you know, and I know that was directly tied to what you're doing there, and Norbert Fong as well. He's in Lyon, right, in France, and what is the woman's name who wasn't a filmmaker but who became one? By pure passion.
It's Cécile Faulhaber, Faulhaber. And the movie is called L'Autre Connexion, or The Other Connection. She has an organization called Troisième Option, which means the third option.
Wow, it's such a cool story. And so many people, I mean, what do people get out of the Deep Nature Connection journey from your perspective?
For me, I mean, the whole motivation that I have that I didn't get is to facilitate people to come to a place of vision, is to really be activated in their gift and really starting to deliver their gift to the world, because the world needs it to function better.
That's lovely. And Jean-Claude did mention something earlier called ROCP, which for listeners, that stands for Renewal of Creative Path, which is a process that actually, my mentor, Tom Brown, started with me in 1975, 76, and, you know, it sort of evolved over time. But there's people all over the world who basically around the winter solstice, we kind of all look inward, you know, and it's essentially what Grandmother Shore likes to say, looking back to go forward, you know, looking back over our life, looking back over our last year, our months, you know, kind of seeing patterns, looking inward, and then finding a way to go forward. And so many people participate in that every year. And it's literally, I think, all the things that I do in the world that I really care about are the result of that process, right? And every year it gets refined. So that's not a small thing, but it really does help people to find their vision. So yeah, thank you for that. I mean, I totally agree. I think when we deeply connect with the earth, with other people and ourselves, there's only one way we can go, which is to find out, why am I here? What is it that I want to bring to the world in service? How can I have a meaningful path that can leave it better than I found it? And you're so right. And thank you for being committed to helping people find their gifts and to be activated through this pathway. It's a big help to the world.
Yeah, I am really interested in this piece on vision and how you arrived at that place. Because in this work of connecting people to each other, helping people connect to nature, we consistently come across kind of a block in people where it's hard to actually make a habit of going to the sit spot. It's hard to actually commit to what it takes to really deeply understand tracking and learn the animals and learn the species of trees and plants and how to interact. And, you know, it's time, it's money, it's lifestyle, but there's something there that needs to be overcome in many people that we come across that are want nature connection. They know that they want it, but there's something that's between them and it. And so I guess my question for you is, do you see when people align with their vision, when they clarify what their vision actually is, that it keeps them on the path more strongly?
Yeah, for sure. And backing up even from that, I'm thinking, because you were kind of asking, like, what, you know, it's hard for people to get there. People have that block. I think one of the things that we work on a lot is that we bring people together in a way so they're not doing it alone. They have places to share their story, to really be received by other people who actually understand what they're talking about, and to offer mentoring in that path. Because to me personally, I think for Jean-Claude too, that place of mentoring is what brought us to that place, you know, of knowing that. And so I think that what draws people, you know, like they may not even know that they're looking for their vision. Sometimes they're just going, I just want to learn all these cool skills with other people. Because yeah, of course they've been wanting to learn those skills forever. They've been wanting to deepen into nature connection forever, but it's something about being able to do it in relationship with other people at the same time that they're forming that relationship to nature. And that when they're in a place where they come against those blocks, they're held with people who can hear them and, you know, listen to them and receive their tears and their difficulty, and maybe just ask them a few questions that help them to get a little bit more deeply into themselves or offer some experiences.
And I think the pattern that we are working with, that it starts with a wound somewhere, and we're on a quest for resolving it. And we can shy away from that emotion that wants to be resolved, or we are on a search. And so then you need the context of nature and community to be able to be facilitated in dealing with that. Because nobody in their right mind want to go where it's painful. They try to avoid it. But with the support of nature and community, there's kind of an inevitable need to deal with it, because you can see that it's limiting yourself. You can feel it. You can. And when you are exposed to people who have been through it and transform it, and it's so inspiring that, yeah, you make the effort to do what it takes.
And you still, like, I mean, why is Jean-Claude still talking with John every week on Village Talk? Because he needs it too. It's this ongoing support to this ongoing sharing of your story and being heard and held, and that helps you go deeper and stay connected.
Yeah, for me, it's that context of tribe, right? You're creating this place for a tribe to be, where everything, it makes sense, you know, that because we're going together to gather the berries and make, you know, baskets, it makes it an integral part of being together. And so I guess my question around your immersion program, because there's many different ways of doing immersions, where some are like, you know, residential, some are not residential, you go 3 days a week or something like that, and then work a part-time job. What's the size of the immersion or the ideal community size that you perceive working well together in this kind of context? And you know, do the people actually live on the land together as well?
We are more in the category of going 3 days a week. And people make different choices. We've had whole groups of students, especially second-year students, like share a whole household together. We live on an island, so it's already a community that's defined by water. And so people, you tend to run into people all the time, even more so maybe than in a small town. And so there's that. And the sizing, our ideal size is kind of capped at 16 people. feels like bigger than that starts to feel like we begin to lose a little bit of the intimacy that we hold when we're holding a group, and, you know, how many stories you can listen to and really be present for and really catch people in. But people, you know, they go and they do their 3 days, it's 3 full days a week. And we have expeditions too, where we go tracking off island for 5 days, and we do an earth walk where people, I wouldn't call it a survival course, but they work on stuff all year that they can bring with them. So they're not just kind of thrown into it as a survival with a knife, but they've brought their own pack basket that they made and their own shoes that we made together, and their water bottle, or not water containers, that so they basically can bring their clothes, a knife, and everything they've made for a week. And
some food that they prepare during the year.
That they've gathered themselves and prepared or dried or whatever. And then they tend to do things. Like, it's always surprises me that, yes, they have maybe part-time jobs, but they're getting together in the evenings, and they get, you know, they have song circles, and they go to on bird sits together. And even throughout the summer, you know, we have this whole signal group, and there's always somebody going, who wants to go on a bird sit at this and this lake tomorrow at 9, or, you know, and people go and do that. So there's a whole kind of community that's been forming over the years that stay. And our idea originally was to see these little, like, to have these little pebbles and that send out the concentric rings of effect, and people would go back to their communities. But a lot of them are staying here. So sometimes I'm like, come on, guys, go back and see. And that's happening as well. Like, we've had people go to the Yukon, and people come from France to do the immersion, go back. Family just went back to Switzerland and is bringing it there and bringing it back to France. And so maybe back to Quebec.
That's what a little bit special about this immersion program, because we do it in 3 years with intention that people go back to their community and start a project. Because I have seen over the years, people who are going through immersion program, and after they are thrown into the wilderness of the normal world and not knowing how to handle it.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about, is this sort of the idea of the reintegration and sort of what comes after it, because of what you had spoken about vision being at the center here, right? Mm-hmm. And then also you had mentioned you're still doing the mentoring yourself every week, or, you know, on a regular basis, because our need for that and that guidance doesn't really end, right? Even when we are very old. And certainly that's been my experience as well. So can you speak a little bit about the people that have sort of left the nest and what you've observed about them, and what, you know, I'm really interested in sort of what works with the reintegration and sort of that next path.
Well, we had a couple that were from the Yukon. We have a very different community that we have, really difficult community, in fact, to bring into nature connection, because they are in nature, but they are not connected to nature.
And there's a lot of trauma too.
There's a lot of trauma there. And a very big presence of indigenous people but slowly they managed to create a program there, and so that's one example.
And I mean, I would say it's different things. We've had people, you know, really go into this work and decide that they want to, like, you know, be nature connection mentors for children or for adults, or even start their own wilderness school. That's absolutely happened. And then there's people who bring this into their existing work, you know, as therapists, or transforming, you know, their work in different ways that they've already been doing, or finding really a different path, like realizing, gosh, that their dream really was to go and work in theater, or their dream really was to work with children with, you know, neuroatypical children that they had never really thought about before, and just discovering these parts of themselves. So it's gone in a lot of different directions. I think what's been important for people is to stay connected with other people who understand this, the work of connection, and to have places to regularly tell their stories, and also to stay connected to the basic core routine practices of nature connection, like going to your sit spot, like staying connected to gratitude. We've had so many people who go and, like, then bring gratitude to other places, you know, even into the business world and the workplace and other, you know, other places where they've been. And so really staying with those cultural practices and bringing that into their life.
And in France, it takes a different is in some way more efficient there because of the volume of students. And so they keep in relationship with each other. They work together. They create projects. There's one woman that is involved into the cooperation, the governmental action of cooperation with African states. And she is responsible for training maybe 50 people to do projects in Africa. And so she's going to bring the whole model inside our work.
Inside
there.
The corporate world.
Yeah.
It's like quite interesting.
And governmental on top of it.
And I think, I mean, a lot of people were drawn to the movie because it focuses on bringing children, nature connection to children and the development of children. And, you know, they really want that for their own children. They want that for their own child inside themselves. And we have a lot of educators that come who are already working with other people. So they take it, they drink it up, and they're like immediately before they hardly know what they're doing out there getting other people to go to their sit spot and do that. So one of the things that's specific, as I know that you're interested in how, you know, this kind of connection work is looking in different places. I think one of the things that's also I've seen is, you know, I'm German. I come here, I feel like I'm on my ancestors' land, even though it's a bit across the border. But, what I notice that feels really different than when we work in Canada, especially in Western Canada, where there's so many options and we still have connection to old growth and this beauty in nature. Like, people here are so aware of what they've lost. They're so aware that there are no old growth forests left, that nature has been so destroyed in so many ways. And so they're aware of how precious time is in some way, if that makes sense. So they're ready to commit, and they're ready to commit fully, and they go for it in a way that I think is different than I've noticed that, you know, when you're on the West Coast, there's so many different options and so many workshops you can take and all of that. They're desperate for it.
At the same time, this trace of culture that are very present, old culture that are still very present, especially in the rural area where we are. During one of the gatherings, we invited two farmers to come, and we asked them to tell their stories of when they were a kid. And when we were asking them about where were the animals, they knew exactly where the animals were.
It's like, where is the wild boar? They both kind of like, over there. Although they both said they don't know anything about tracking.
Yeah, they pretended.
They don't know anything about tracking, but they're like, oh yeah, there's footprints, but we don't know. And then we said, well, where's the wild boar right now? It's like, whoosh, over there. and I also remember asking them about their childhood experiences as, you know, in nature, because they'd obviously lived in the same valley for 50 or 60 years where they were born, and the same farm surrounded by the same mountains. And one of the men had been up the mountain that was where Jean-Claude was up on the very first day.
Yeah, the mountain that we see behind.
The very first day he was up on that mountain. This man was 50 before he went up on that mountain, because he was just like, we're just working, and we didn't have time to like do things in nature. We were working since we were six. And I said, oh, so you mean you didn't, you know, like build forts or go and climb trees or stuff like that? And he said, oh yeah, yeah, that. And he used a word bêtise, which kind of means like not
silly
things. So those were just shenanigans. That wasn't like connecting to nature. Those were just shenanigans. We, you know, like silly things we were doing. And, you know, I was so struck by the importance of like listening to people's stories, people who had never been seen in their own community as holding value or being elders or in some way, because we do this thing that we call feeding the story. When somebody tells a story, whether it's a personal story or a myth or any kind of story, we ask people just to name images of something that they saw, like that they heard in the story that spoke to them. And so we asked the community around, there's about 100 people, to feed the story after these guys, you know, were telling. And they were so, nobody had ever asked them any of these things before. And people were just saying, you know, the images, oh yes, you know, this thing that, I don't know, I can't remember what the images were right now, but they just were feeding them all these images, and they were moved like almost to tears. And they said, wow, you were really listening to us. And that, to me, that speaks of something that I've learned through this work. That feels like very much the core of what can nourish us.
You're digging into the heart of, you know, what nature connection is, which is very hard for people to track. It's like these farmers that have been in this valley for their whole life, they have what I would call unconscious competence. You know, there's enough threads in the culture, probably their elders when they were kids, you know, encouraging these quote unquote shenanigans, right? But I always say, if it's not fun, it's not connective, you know? So if it isn't playful, it isn't connective, you know? And I know Jean-Claude to be very playful. Mm-hmm. And I think about, like, when people think about, oh, my, I got to find my vision, I got to find my path in life, you know, it's very serious. How do, you know, Paul Rayfield likes to say, you know, this is serious, but we're going to have fun. We're going to have some serious fun. You know, so I wonder, like, how do you bridge that? Because you know, as well as I do, Jean-Claude, that when we're having fun, when we're like kids again, in essence, right? And not necessarily childish, right? But it's like our, you know, I hate to, you know, beat this kind of old trope of the inner child, but it really is that, you know, it's like waking up what's at the center of us that doesn't feel like it's doing anything responsible. You know, oh, that's not really anything. We were just playing, right? But look what it did for them, right? That's the unconscious competence of connection. But how do you balance out the fun and the seriousness?
I mean, for me, it was really important to work with the kids, to reconnect with the fun that was in me. And to get out of that seriousness, that I went quite deeply into the serious part of my life, and it was dark. And so, yeah, I don't know if I need to balance it. And now it's something that I put ahead of everything. We got to play. We got to, when we have apprentices, and I always tell them to, if you want to work with adults, you have to work with kids first. You have to reconnect with your childhood. You have to redeal with all the blocks that stop you from having fun like you were a kid.
I think I'm the opposite. I was like constantly in the fun and screw the seriousness world. And I had to get a little bit more serious and responsible. So there's a lot of, you know, like I often say humor is for me one of the fastest tracks to intimacy. So I'm up for laughing a lot. And one of the things we actually do in the immersion is I study clown as part of, you know, my growing through and towards my vision. And we do some clowning work to really just like to allow ourselves to just be free and in that authentic, playful self that at the same time is to me the combination of our innocence and also our experience as we grow.
That's brilliant. Oh, sorry,
we can see the transformation of people that way from the beginning of a year to the end of a year. It's like there's so much laughing happening.
And a lot of crying too. We don't tell them about that. They'll find that on their own.
You have to cry first to be able to have fun after.
Well, you know, I want to hand it to you for that insight. You know, you're not going to work with the adults until you work with the children first. It's very interesting because you said we're going to go back and remember what it was like to be a child, and then we're going to find where the blocks are. And that is incredibly wise, incredibly wise. Just hats off. And the clowning and the humor, thank goodness, you know. And now I think all three of us will sign up for Wisdom of the Earth this year, and we'll all we'll run our village remotely from Salt Spring Island so we can go on this journey with you.
I was just curious, are you saying that you actually, for your adult immersion program, require that they interact with children in some way? Or are you speaking about getting in touch with their own inner child?
No, yeah, they have to work with kids. If the apprentices, the second year apprentices,
but learn mentoring,
can work with adults, but they also have to go one day a week to work with the kids. And we also bring in the first year too, we go to when the kids have rites of passage. We actually, they're kind of together, you know, they have their shelter rite of passage. The kids have it and the adults all have it too in their own way, you know, at a more advanced level than we do it. And we get the kids to give them hints of, you know, how to build a better shelter. And they also both do Fire Quest kind of thing, but again, at their own level, but one week after the other, and then they go to support the kids doing theirs.
That is absolutely brilliant. And so this is with the Wolf kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Some days we get together and play together.
Play a big game. Yeah. So you need like a whole bunch of people to play a really big running game sometimes. So
it's good for the adults. It's good for the children, both. Yeah. For the children to see adults who are activated and joyous, that's also very important.
Mm-hmm. Role modeling in both directions.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
The children are teaching the adults how to be children and how to get connected, right? Like the children almost never struggle unless they come from a very difficult background. They never struggle to find this connection thing, right? It's so obvious and innate. You know, and I remember when our late Uncle Jake Swamp was talking about the story of the peacemaker. And here this man was all by himself, who was from a different tribe altogether. He wasn't even from the people who were at war. And he's walking from place to place talking to these warlords and trying to figure out how to get them to give up war. And Jake said one of the things that he utilized was that the children always know, you know, 7, 8, you know, 5 years old, they speak truth. You know, we shouldn't be doing this to each other. Why aren't we just living with each other and living in harmony with the earth? And he reminds the warlords, look back inside and remember when you felt that way as a child, and then check, is that true or not? You know, it's such a beautiful thing that you're hitting on there. It's so healing. And you know, if it could bring the five nations to peace after generations of bloody civil war, it has some power in it, you know, and you guys are using that in such a gorgeous way. It's very inspiring.
It really brings up for me how there's such a lack of integration between generations in our modern society, right? Where children are going away to school and, you know, maybe hanging out with their parents at night, right? And not as much of that village integration where, you know, I don't have children. And so there, I don't have access to that community of young people, so that you're bringing it together in a really intentional way is just really genius. I'm feeling a lot from that. Yeah, it's just really grateful to hear from you both and for the work that you're doing. And as I said before we started the recording, just that you're the immersion paradigm, right? The immersion experience of really being in a community and living together and sharing values and experiences and activities is really rare to come across. So that you're doing it is so valuable. And the concentric rings, like you talked about, it just feels really potent because I know people that have been through your program and what they're bringing to the world. So again, just thank you for the conversation and for what you're bringing.
Yeah, I'm going to just second that. I'm so moved. You know, it's like a birthday present for me on my 64th birthday to hear these stories and through them to feel the ripples of healing and goodness that are coming through the commitment that you two hold this fire down, you know, for Wisdom of the Earth and what you're doing in France as well and all the lives you're touching. It's really, really wonderful. So thank you for gifting me and gifting us.
If people want to find you, it's wisdomoftheearth.ca. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Wisdomoftheearth.ca. That's it.
They will not know about France because it's not on that website. It's troisièmeoption.org.
For the French people who are listening, yeah. They know what that means. Troisièmeoption.org.
Yeah, and we'll make sure all these links are included in the podcast notes as well. So you can find Jean-Claude and Ingrid's work. And yeah, I just want to say thank you for sharing everything today, and this is very inspiring to me, and especially that story there of just all the different stages of people together and how they're sort of unwinding their old wounds and moving through it and then going back out into the world. It's just a beautiful story to share. So thank you both.
Thank you. Really grateful to be here. And also, I mean, so much gratitude, John. I feel it so, so often. Don't express it that often, but really it's in my heart so often. And we speak it also in our circles. for everything that you've carried forward with your vision, and going back to all those stories you shared yesterday too, all that, those lines of what you dedicated your life to has really impacted so many people. And we're just kind of a continuation of those concentric rings of effect. So thank you.
Yeah, the same for me. So much gratitude for what John brought to my experience in inspiration and in clarity, and helping me even directly to move through some of my block and come to that place where I can actually help others to do that. A lot of gratitude for that, yeah.
Yeah.
What I'll say in closing is that, you know, so many people, you know, that are now ancestors, Jake, Judy, Ingwe, Gilbert, Walking Bull, they were all so hoping that this would be true. You know, that when Ingwe and I started in 1983, it seemed impossible. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, so many years later, he said, wow, what we had to overcome. But I can see that our dream is coming true. You know, that the dream was that this is exactly what would happen, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's smiling from that happy hunting ground he always talked about before he passed away. And, you know, thanks to all those wonderful elders and helpers and teachers and people that have helped this work for so long that it could reach us and continue to help others. So, yeah, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.